The only time I wasn't numb to it was in the moment where I'm literally walking with a casket next to me, and we put them over their final resting place, fold the flag, and I'm listening to their mother wail. And we're told you have to maintain military bearing. And I'm sitting there like, how in the hell? Like, I'm not a robot. How I'm supposed to sit here and fold this over my buddy. This is the last time. This isn't somebody, this is not Arlington where I don't know the person and I'm just doing some service. I could see how that would be, you could be a little bit more disconnected, but this is somebody I went to basic training with and spent my entire career in this unit with. And in some circumstances, actually watched the accident happen where they perished. So absolutely the most difficult thing ever was to hold in tears while that was going on.
Welcome to Your Story Doesn't End Here, the mental health podcast of military and veterans who refuse to be silenced. I'm your host, Rachel, and my mission with this podcast is to be a voice for those who don't have a voice, bring awareness to mental health issues, provide value and solutions, and to change the culture when it comes to mental health within the DoD organizations. Hey, everyone, and thank you so much for coming back for another episode of Your Story Doesn't End Here. Today's guest is Eric Upchurch. Eric is an Army Special Operations veteran who has a passion for educating the military community on how to create long-term wealth through real estate investing. He has invested in thousands of multifamily, storage, mobile home park, and student housing units as a general partner over the last decade, with involvement in sourcing, capital raise, risk capital, asset management, investor relations, and as a key principal. While serving our nation, Eric completed 5 combat deployments and earned a master's degree in aeronautical science while managing a 27-man squad deployed around the globe. Eric now serves as co-founder of Active Duty Passive Income and is a senior advisor with ADPI Capital. And Eric resides in California with his wife of 18 years and 2 boys. Eric, thank you so much for being on the show today.
I'm glad to be here. Yeah, I'm hoping to add some value to your community.
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to pass it off to you to share your story.
All right. I don't know exactly where to start, but I guess I'll just give a brief intro to where I came from up to the military, and then a little bit about military, and then what I've been up to since and how it's been going for me. Sound good?
Sounds good to me. Go for
Perfect.
It.
All right. So I grew up in the Midwest. Graduated a semester early from high school with a buddy of mine. I have no idea how we ended up doing that. We weren't the smartest guys in the class, but anyway, got out of Iowa, moved to California, ended up going to culinary school. And that was kind of our passion at the time. And we were cooking in Carmel, and I realized that wasn't a passion of mine. I didn't have the creative bone in my body that a lot of chefs do out there. Then ended up going to junior college, transferred to UC Santa Barbara to get my 4-year degree. Met my wife there. And we, as you said in the intro, we've been married 18 years now. And when I graduated, I was doing some odd jobs. I was like bellman at the Four Seasons Hotel locally there in Santa Barbara. And my wife's kind of like, my girlfriend at the time, like, what do you want to do? Everyone's trying to figure out what the heck they want to do after college, right? So she's like, I could see you maybe doing something in the military. Now, I grew up in a law enforcement family. My dad and his twin brother were deputy sheriffs, retired. Uncle was a Marine, retired. Another, all on the same side of the family, DEA, FBI. So everyone was kind of in that line already. And they're all kind of like, don't do this. So I grew up kind of with that mentality of like, this isn't the best way. You're going to end up being very cynical. And, I saw that in my parents and my dad and his brothers and stuff. And so that's kind of just where I was at. They were like, well, maybe I don't want to go be a cop because, my dad's like, you're going to be around bad situations and people. It's kind of the job, right? I'm like, okay, I kind of see that. So my wife's like, hey, why don't you go check out the military? And she didn't know all this part of my upbringing yet. And I was like, well, I don't know. It sounds interesting. So let me go see. And so I went to the Coast. I was like, okay, I have a college degree. I don't want to go get hurt. Like, I'm not like trying to be Superman or like Captain America here. I just want to like serve and like go check it out maybe. So I was like, Coast Guard sounds safe. So I went to the Coast Guard first, the recruiting office, they're like, no, we're not. This is 2004, by the way, for frame of reference. They're like, nope, don't need you. Navy, nope, don't need you. Air Force, nope. Hey, blue to green, go see the Army. They're pushing people in the Army because we're, you know, in Iraq and Afghanistan, and war was heating up and stuff. And so I go to the Army, and Marine Corps was not even a thought. I was like, no, because everyone's kicking down doors in the Marine Corps. So I know I'm generalizing there, but people in the Marines know what I'm talking about. So I went to the Army, and they're like, yeah, you've got 200 jobs you can choose from, you know, and you can become, you'll be an officer because you've got a college education already. I'm 24 years old, and I'm like, all right, well, let me pick something that seems safe. And so I was like, well, the Air Force is safe, right? And so maybe this is like, let me get into the Army's version of the Air Force, which is just the aviation branch. So I was like, that sounds like good. So I picked a job in Army Aviation, and I chose to be enlisted instead of becoming an officer. So I weighed pros and cons, and I'm like, what's going to be best for me, you know, mentally, physically, financially, all these things. So I go in and I'm like, okay, I start off as an E4. So I start off as a specialist in the Army, which has its pros and cons through basic training. I'll explain that in a second. But so the reason that I did that was really twofold. One, it paid off all of my college debt. So I had 2 years at a university. It was like 50 grand that I owed. It wiped out all my college debt. So that was a good move. Second, I'd always ended up kind of inadvertently influencing younger people or people that I was working with. I was always a manager of people kind of by accident. And so I knew that if I was enlisted, I could go and maybe manage a group, eventually a group of, you know, 18-year-olds or something, and help them figure out anything that I know in life, maybe help them get through college or something, or like apply for college and mentor them a little bit. So I was a kind of that part of it appealed to me as well. So I go in, and I'm like trying to be gray man. Everybody wants to be gray man in basic training. Like, you don't want to stand out. You're getting yelled at all the time and all this stuff. And like, the last thing I want to do is stand out, but I'm already an E4. I'm the only one with my rank in my basic training platoon. So I already stood out. And here's an interesting thing about how I got into special operations. I did not even know what special operations was. I didn't apply for special operations, didn't try to get in, was not even in my sights. All I was trying to do was make it home for my wedding on time. We had a wedding planned 6 months after I enlisted in Southern California. We had 120 guests coming, and I only had access to a payphone for 5 minutes on Sundays for 6 months. So I knew that I had to be super squared away. I couldn't piss off anybody. I couldn't fail a PT test or a written test or any kind of test. I couldn't fail anything. So I ended up at the top of my class by accident. I finished at the top of my class. And because of that, I got selected for Special Operations Aviation Regiment, where I spent my whole time in service. And so that led to 5 deployments. It led to, you know, a whole bunch of other stuff. I loved my time in service. And I also, unfortunately, buried a lot of my friends. I was the burial detail NCOIC. And so, man, talk about highs and lows. It is like every type of chemical coursing through your veins, including, you know, the highest levels of cortisol, stress hormone, coursing through your veins and in doses. And doses is a great word for this, because when you look now, from what I know about behavioral health and military transitions now, I know that, let me paint a picture for your audience. When you think about a veteran committing suicide, that is the most extreme example of withdrawal. And I'll explain. When you're in the military, especially, and then tier one operators, special operations forces have a much higher percentage of veteran suicide than even regular veterans do. But even veterans, just a regular veteran who served in the Army for however many years, doesn't even matter. You are essentially a sports car. Somebody who's in the military is laughing when I say that right now, because they're like, no. But you are, really. You're given some things. You're given excellent training. You know where to be, what time, what uniform, what attitude. You know, you have safety and control well in hand. You've got mission. You've got camaraderie. You've got a sense of belonging. You know what you're supposed to do, and you have a purpose, right? That is what the military does. It gives you a sense of purpose. Now, If you take something like that and consider it a sports car, as soon as you get out of the military, it is like an F1 race car going off the rails and hitting a guardrail. And you don't know it's happening because what's going on in the military, all of those things that I just laid out, you're getting oxytocin, dopamine, serotonin, cortisol, stuff that your body's like, ooh, that's nice. Ooh, that's good. Oh, and awards and accolades. Oh, that's a nice pat on the back. Ooh, maybe I'll do that thing again, right? So you get all those. And when you get out, no more. It's all gone. No one cares if you're clean shaven or not. No one cares what uniform or outfit or, you know, business attire you're wearing, generally speaking. No one cares if you showed up on late. That kind of doesn't matter. People are complaining about cold coffee. You've got this huge gap of a learning curve of how do I now reintegrate into a society that doesn't have all of those things that are going to offer me those chemical hits, those doses that I'm getting. And the problem is it's not recognized. Like me, when I got out, not a thought in the world that that was going to happen to me. I wasn't thinking about it proactively, like, oh, I got to watch out for withdrawal from the things that I got in the military. All I was thinking about was, screw that, I'm out. You know, I'm glad I served, but I'm done with that. And now my life's going to be better. That was my thought process. But what's really going on is your body's now not receiving all of those chemicals that it got. It's not receiving mission and sense of purpose and all of that stuff. So you see veterans, and veterans out there listening to this, you'll know exactly what I mean. You see a veteran, whether it's you or your friend or your family member who just got out, they're doing thrill-seeking activities. They're getting in fights, destructive behavior with family, destroying relationships, getting divorced, getting arrested, or suicide. That is a direct result of not recognizing the problem, which is that withdrawal. You now no longer have all of those things. So kind of coming full circle, how do we solve that problem? I guess is a great question. We solve it by awareness, letting a veteran know that, hey, this is going to happen to you. We just hired a retired 06. My former company commander now works for my company. He's a colonel at Special Operations Command, just retired. And I told him, hey, you had a 28-year career. I served with you. And I'm telling you right now, I've been out 10 years. You will need to see behavioral health. Even though he had an amazing career and got, you know, everything was looks great on paper. But once it's gone, things change. And so what kind of changed my mentality on it when I got out, I was like, oh, and I'll sidebar here. When I was in a special operations unit, you weren't allowed to go see a behavioral health specialist. You could lose your security clearance. That's since changed according to my old commander. But I wasn't allowed to go see if something was wrong when I buried my friend. And because it was like, you know, mission next day, go on to the next thing, boom, boom, boom. Fast op tempo. When I got out, I was back in the San Francisco Bay Area. I was driving in San Francisco, going to something for my job. And I pull off and I see this guy with a sign that said, homeless veteran, need help or something. And I was like, man, I bet you 20 years ago or 10 years ago, that guy did not think he'd be sitting here on the side of the road. And I'm assuming that it's a legit sign and whatever. I'm just thinking about that person, even just an avatar of a person, that example of a person. So I was like, maybe I should go and just go to the VA and get checked out, just see what's up. So I go to the VA the next week. My first ever appointment, I was in tears. And I'm not an overly emotional guy in general, but I learned about the psychiatrist that I was talking to had me write out some of my experiences. And I immediately started writing out all of the death and, you know, burying guys that I'd served with for 6 years and, you know, listening to their mothers cry as I'm trying to fold a flag over their casket. And some of those like hardest things I've ever done in my life are those. So I started writing them out and then she made me read them. And I'm telling you, when I read them, I was just like, I could not even get the words out. It was crazy. Learned about survivor's guilt, learned about all of these things that had I not done that, I would have had no idea that this was happening inside me. I just felt like, well, yeah, maybe I lashed out at that guy because he doesn't have my perspective and that his cold coffee doesn't really matter at the coffee shop, you know? What I had to realize, what I had to come to kind of understand through 3 years of therapy, at that point, I was like, okay, shoot, there's something there. I got to go get help. So after 3 years of therapy, it was, I have to change my perspective, because I can't count on every civilian to have had my experience. It's not fair to them, and it's not fair to me and my family if I'm walking around every day, you know, trying to mold everybody else to my experiences. So I have to recognize that when someone has a bad day, and I'm using coffee as a kind of a cliche thing that people talk about, but somebody has cold coffee and they're complaining about it, I have to realize that that's their reality right now, that they didn't experience, you know, bullets and bombs and death, and that's okay. But that takes intentional effort. And if you don't have intentional awareness about that, the effort doesn't come. And so the solution really to veteran suicide is getting veterans to understand that that is what happens to you. It is a chemical thing that happens to your body without your input. So thankfully I've had that, and I've you know, been on a lot of podcasts, and fortunate enough to at least hopefully somebody recognizes that that's a reality, and then they can start to change their behavior, whether it be doing it on their own or going to actually seek help, even when you think that you don't need it. So that's kind of where I'm at now. So that was, you know, the beginning of my civilian life after the military. And then I started investing in real estate, and we started active duty passive income. And really, that is like my outlet. It's the, how do I serve after service? Now I get to go and interact with other veterans and teach them stuff that I'm doing, whether it's real estate investing or whatever, it doesn't matter. What matters is giving veterans another sense of purpose, another mission after their mission is complete.
And you are also tackling veteran homelessness as well, in a way, correct? Yeah. Can you talk
absolutely
a little bit more about that?
In a big way. And I'll say, on my vision boards right in front of me, I have three vision boards, and my accomplishments and goals vision board, it says end veteran homelessness. And we're ending veteran homelessness this decade. I work hand in hand with Veterans Community Project, and I'm mostly raising money and awareness. And I do these crazy hard challenges that only crazy people will do. And we raise a lot of money, and we build tiny homes for homeless veterans. And I'll give you some statistics, because I think this paints another great picture. About 4 years ago, there were 38,000 homeless veterans on the streets. There are currently around 32,000 homeless veterans. So this is a solvable problem that Veterans Community Project is tackling. It's a platinum rated nonprofit. And we are ending veteran homelessness this decade. It is just a money problem. And thankfully, in the real estate industry, finding people with money is part of what I do. And we know what number, it's $250 million. And that, to somebody who isn't accustomed to raising money, $250 million is an achievable number. When you put that money to work, the problem will be completely eradicated forever. So it's a pretty neat thing, and we're watching it happen. And I get to go use my time, talent, and treasure. Treasure, just the three T's, but treasure is money. But my time and talent is used by talking on podcasts. It's used by doing these crazy hikes that I put together every year, and we raise a lot of money and do really hard things. And the story behind that is, if I can go hike 170 miles in 9 days or 210 miles in 14 days and raise a bunch of money, that is still easier than what our brothers and sisters are experiencing on the streets every night. And so building that story behind it and allowing people to donate to that cause, people get excited about it. We get excited about it, and we get to go endure the pain and suffering of the challenges, but we bond and we do great things for people who need it.
That is incredible. I think the veteran community loves getting behind stuff like that, especially when there's challenges and something to work for among other veterans. I do want to go back a little bit to what you said about the withdrawal thing, because you articulated it so well. I went through that withdrawal period too. And I tell every person that I know who's active duty, like, hey, just watch out. There's going to be a little bit of a period where you're going to want to like do nothing, or you're just going to feel different or something. And I didn't ever quite connect the dots until you said that. So I really appreciate that, because it does make so much sense when you start talking about chemicals in the brain and how we lose that when we separate from service. So thank you so much for articulating that so well. When we talk about your combat experience and especially burying your friends, was that something that you really dealt with at that time? Or because I hear from a lot of combat vets that they compartmentalize and then they just kind of push it to the back of their head to deal with later. So I'm curious what your experience was mentally when you were burying these people that you served alongside.
Oh man, numb. We had to be numb to it. Yeah. And so we would, I mean, some of them were suicide. The first guy, Michael Blamowitz, that we buried, committed suicide. Nobody saw it coming. And we went to his hometown in Texas and put him in the ground. And that's when I realized that, like, how real it was. I had a little bit of a taste. The day I showed up to my unit, we had a memorial for the guys. I'm sure everyone has heard the story, Operation Red Wing, which is Lone Survivor. Our unit was the unit that was inserting and extracting Marcus Luttrell and all those people, or people have probably seen the movie, but I arrived in 2005 at the unit when those guys were being buried. I mean, I pulled into the parking lot and they're like, go to the end of the flight line. There's a memorial. And I'm like, what memorial for what? It was that mission. And so rude awakening right away. And I'm like, you know, at that time I was like, holy cow, this is deep. But then you get into it and then you start seeing like how fast everything is. And it's so fast. Like we never redeployed. We never came home. We had rotators every 30 days in country for 20 years. Still, we're still doing it in places that people don't know that we normally are. And so it wasn't like, it was just a norm. You just go through and you're like, okay, we lost another helicopter. Okay, we lost another guy to this. We lost another guy to that. You put down your things and you would go and practice with a wooden crate that was the size of a casket for a week before you go to their hometown, you know, checking your weapons through TSA and then going and you practice at the gravesite. And so it was like an abrupt, like, mission stop. And then you go and you bury your friend and then you go back and it's mission full on. There's no time for, you know, for sitting around and playing games. And, you know, we're in seven theaters of operation, you know, getting the bad guy every night. And so you can't just sit there and dwell on it. And I don't think they wanted you to, because bad things would happen if they did. And that's probably why they didn't want you to go see behavioral health. You weren't allowed to go see a psychiatrist. You can go talk to the chaplain if you want, your battalion chaplain, but that's about it. And so, yeah, it was, again, like the only time I wasn't numb to it was in the moment where I'm literally walking with a casket next to me and we put them over their final resting place, fold the flag, and I'm listening to their mother wail. And you know, we're told you have to maintain military bearing. And I'm sitting there like, how in the hell? Like, I'm not a robot. You know, how I'm supposed to sit here and fold this over my buddy. This is the last time. This isn't somebody, this is not Arlington where I don't know the person and I'm just doing some service. I could see how that would be, you could be a little bit more disconnected, but this is somebody I went to basic training with and spent my entire career in this unit with. And in some circumstances actually watched the accident happen where they perished. So, absolutely the most difficult thing ever was to hold in tears while that was going on. And so, yeah, to answer your question, numb up to the moment, just in terrible shape during the moment of burial. And then afterwards it's right back at it. And you're just expected to keep on moving. So I'm sure a lot of people who are listening to this can completely relate to that, because it's not an uncommon thing, I don't think.
And how did all this affect your home life? Obviously, you were with your wife prior to your service. And so I'm curious what effect that had, your experiences, on your home life.
Yeah, I mean, I've been out now. I've been out of the service for 12 years. And it's still a lingering thing. I still have mood swings that I'm aware of. I'm physically, mentally aware of when I'm going down, you know, and because of those things, I stay away from alcohol and drugs and all that stuff. But, you know, prior to service, my wife didn't experience that stuff. And now it's like, I mean, thankfully I'm aware of it and I can kind of tackle it. And my wife knows when I'm in a mood, you know, and she knows what that means. And I just have to find, I just have to reset myself to mission and purpose. And here's what does it a lot of the times for me, not all the time, but I tell myself this, I serve with the memory and pride of those who've gone before me, for they love to fight, fought to win, would rather die than quit. And so when I'm doing one of these hard challenges, when I'm facing something in business that's challenging, when I'm having a mood, when I'm whatever it is, I think of Josue, or I think of Michael, or I think of any of the guys that I've buried. I think of them and the pain that I'm enduring right now, and that they would love the opportunity to feel the pain that I have in my legs, in my arms, in my back, or mental challenges that I have right now. So, you know, changing my frame of mind around, it sucks for me to be in this position right now, but somebody else would love to have what I have, what I, you know, to be able to feel. And so that's helped me physically and mentally quite a bit. And that's a matter of having what I call just a strong, a deeply rooted why. Not just a, hey, why do you want to go start a business? Why do you want to do this? It's not the, my why isn't because my family deserves it. A lot of people say, oh, because I want to do better for my kids, I want to do better for my wife. That's fine. But unless it almost brings you to tears, it's not going to get you out of a mood. It's not going to help you push out of a dark place that nobody else can relate to. So it's got to be something that is so deep rooted that no matter where you are, you'll be like, I'm better off. I'll be okay.
So I want to use that to kind of segue into your journey into entrepreneurship. Because I know for me, when I separated from the military, switching my mindset to an entrepreneur mindset, still to this day, is difficult for me in some aspects of it. So talk us through that journey. And I don't know, this is kind of a just really black and white question, but how hard or easy was it for you to switch your mindset from military combat to an entrepreneur mindset to be able to build what you've built today?
Without a new passion and purpose, it's nearly impossible. And I will say this because, and this is why so many entrepreneurs and so many businesses fail, because coming out of the military, you have to be ready to fail. You're not set up for failure in the military. You are given everything you need to succeed. That's not what happens in entrepreneurialism. And when you're starting a business, get ready to fail, because the world is going to set you up to fail. It's rigged to fail. I don't mean to say rigged in some political way or anything like that, because you can go do whatever you want, but unless you have the right attitude around failure, you're not going to make it. And so getting comfortable knowing that you're going to lose is really tough on your pride. It's tough on you mentally. It's tough on you physically. It's a very difficult thing that not a lot of people can do. And then if you add the veteran to that, if a veteran has a sense of purpose and mission that is so deep that they'll get through any of it, they're going to be better entrepreneurs than a civilian would be. But you got to push so hard because you're used to succeeding all the time. So pretty tough leap.
What's been your biggest failure in business so far?
Oh my gosh. Patience is a big one. I mean, our companies are doing great. We're affecting a lot of people in a lot of positive ways, but it is like, you know, I'm at a point where I just like, I want it to be such a big win. You know, I want the VA to come to me and be like, we need your stuff. You know, like you want it fast and big, and you know, it's affecting people, but not everyone can see the same mission. And so patience is a failure of mine, because I know how many people we can impact. But then on the real estate investing side, I don't really care about that. Like I fail all the time on things that I try that I don't like, but I try them. And those are the things that I'll never do again. Like it stupid little thing, investing in tax liens, just doing fine, did fine with it, just bores me to tears. But so I'm glad I did it, because now I know I'm never doing it again. So you call it a failure, but it's also really just a learning lesson. That's all failures are. I tell my kids this. My kids are 11 and 14. And since they were four, I'm like, fail, go break something, go figure out. And then you know what? Just don't do the same thing again the next time. Just do it a little different. And then I give them examples of all the inventors out there that tried 10,000 times. And on the 10,000 first time, they got it right and it changed everything. And so, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at on that.
Awesome. So talk to us a little bit more about active duty, passive income. How long have you been doing it now for? I know you have this conference coming up with it, and I know it's not the first year. So just tell us a little bit more about what it is, first of all, and what you guys are doing with it.
Yeah, so Active Duty Passive Income is a company we started 6 years ago with just a Facebook group at the time. We didn't intend for it to be a company. We started a Facebook group to share our experiences as we were doing them. Kind of like I was saying earlier, it's like I bought a turnkey property and I was like, let me just do a Facebook Live and tell people about it and what the cash flow looks like. So we're just sharing our stories and wondering whether or not people like other military members and veterans were going to be interested in this. Well, we have 73,000 members now, and we're the leading military real estate investing education company and community in the world, and meetups globally. And we have several subsidiary companies that do lending and insurance and all this stuff. So the next logical step was, let's recreate our community, our virtual community, in person so that we can really network and get together. And so we started ADPICon in New Orleans last year. This year is in San Antonio in October, and we're doubling the size, and we're really excited about it. It gives people really the opportunity to not only learn, but to network and understand, like, you know, how to build teams. And we speak this language of real estate, but we also speak a language of military. And when you get two hyper niches together like that, it is so incredible to see people win together. And so when we did it last year in New Orleans, the feedback we got was, you guys need to do this again, and it needs to be bigger and more people need to see it. And we're like, really? We didn't expect it to be like that. And they're like, yeah, and you need to add a day. So now it's a 3-day event instead of a 2-day event. And so we're like, all right, so what are the needs? And that's honestly the only reason that we have lending and insurance and our fund and all those subsidiary companies is because our community told us to do those things. We didn't want to do those things. They said, we need better lending. We need a whole life insurance product. We need a way to invest with you, which is ADPI Capital. We need educated realtors nationwide, so ADPI Realty exists. We didn't try to do those things. The community said, you're the hub, so please provide those. And we listened over a 6-year period and started to develop those companies to help people.
That's incredible. And honestly, not a business model that most people talk about, where you just start something and then you just cultivate it based off of what people want. But what an incredible business model. I'll say, when I first started learning real estate investing and I said I was military, first suggestion from everyone I talked to, are you part of the ADPI community? So nice. The name is definitely out there. What you've built is incredible. Where can people find you and support you?
Yeah, you can find me actually for military members. If you have a question on how to get started, I'm going to give you my email address and I will respond to you. It's eric@activedutypassiveincome.com. All over social media. You can find me at Real Eric Upchurch on Instagram. I don't know if there are any fake Eric Upchurches, but I'm the real one. And my wife gives me a hard time about that. But yeah, so reach out. I'm always glad to answer a DM if you have a question, and I'll always provide a resource.
And if anyone wants to contribute to stopping veteran homelessness, what is the best avenue to help with that?
You can reach out to me and I will make sure it happens. Or you can also go to veteranscommunityproject.org. And again, if you go to, I think it's called Guiding Light, you'll see that Veterans Community Project is a platinum rated nonprofit. That just means a certain percentage, a very high percentage of their donations goes directly to solving the problem, not to administrative things and all that stuff. So great organization. And my family and I have spent time building the houses, and I know all those people very well. So it's a great cause.
Awesome. Thank you. Well, the last thing, Eric, that if you just want to leave the audience with any last words or pieces of advice, and we'll end it here.
Yeah, easy enough. I'll just say, if you're military transitioning, go check out some kind of behavioral health, just get your head checked and see what's in there. And then also, whatever it is you want in life, go get it. Find a new sense of mission and purpose, and just go find it. And here's the formula that you can use to make sure that happens. Okay. It's a 4-part formula. Write these down. First thing is, learn everything you can. Network your butt off. You got to add value to people. Put people first. listen to problems, solve the problems, and then last, take action. If you do those four things with the intention to be 1% better every day, success will hunt you down. Especially after the military, you'll be a raving hit in the civilian sector if you do those things, okay?
Thank you for taking the time to listen in today. With your support, we are able to increase awareness of the mental health issues affecting service members and veterans today with the goal of creating positive change. If you got value from this episode, please take 30 seconds to subscribe and share this episode within your own network. Until next time, remember, your story matters, your mental health matters, and your story doesn't end here.